This is Prop Point on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson and Nick Whalen from RotoWire right here. Oh my goodness, we have so much to talk about tonight. NBA news is leading it, and both on and off the court. We'll be previewing the NBA draft lottery as well. We're going to talk a little NHL betting with RotoWire's AJ Schultz, and then we'll finish up with baseball. Copious news as well as bets from the tonight's slate as well. So much to cover. Nick, we're going to start off in your backyard, though. Talking about Giannis, the news on him. He's open to the possibility of playing elsewhere next year, to exploring other teams. Mm-hmm. Tell me what this means.
I think this is Giannis and his camp testing the waters, if you will. How will this be received? You know, kind of greasing the wheels a little bit for what could be something that's a bit more declarative as we move through the NBA offseason. And I don't think it is a coincidence, Jeff, that we get this report the morning of the NBA draft lottery, which tends to be a catalyst as far as offseason moves go. Now, you can't sign any players, you can't make any official trades until July, but we'll talk more about the lottery later in the show as far as what it could mean for some of those teams. Obviously, everybody wants to move up the board. Everybody wants a chance at Cooper Flagg, but let's say the Houston Rockets move into the top three, or the San Antonio Spurs do that. Maybe they would look to include that pick as a sweetener in a deal for someone like Giannis Antetokounmpo. So look, when you hear the wording here, this is not a trade demand by any means for Giannis. He has two more years plus a player option left on his contract. But saying I'm open to exploring other teams, that might be as close as we get me out of here from someone like Giannis, who is a very unique superstar in this league. I would be very surprised if we get to the point where Giannis is publicly pressuring the organization. I think if he does ask to be moved, I think he'll do it as gently as he possibly can. I think he'll try to kind of keep this behind the scenes. But if I'm a Bucks fan, I don't view this as good news, right? I think what you want to hear is Giannis doubling down and saying, I want to be a Milwaukee Buck for life, not putting it out there that, I'm open for the first time in my career to looking at some other teams. I do think it's possible that Giannis, because of the player that he is, because of the person that he is, he would want to remain in Milwaukee in the name of loyalty. The Bucks do have some level of flexibility this offseason, certainly more than they did in the summer of 2024. But even so, even if you push the right buttons in free agency and you're using your exceptions and whatnot, and all of a sudden their 2031 first round pick is available to be traded, can you really improve the roster to a point where you can go into next season and say, we feel good about contending for a title? You could probably get it to the point, if Giannis is there, where you feel good about maybe winning a playoff series, but I'm pretty low as far as what I would expect Damian Lillard to look like when he comes back, late next season. That's just such a huge question mark, to play the entire regular season without him and expect him to look anything like the player that he was at his peak coming out of the Achilles injury. So I've said all along, Jeff, I'm a Bucks fan. I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I would love for Giannis to stay here. It doesn't make sense. If Giannis wants to win a ring in the remaining 3 or 4 years of his prime, it's just not going to happen in Milwaukee.
And if the Bucks want to retool and have the next championship level team, it probably includes trading Giannis when he has his most value still, as opposed to waiting till he starts to climb. I mean, let's face it, he's missed a handful of games every year, missed the playoff series against the Pacers last season. There's plenty of reason for them to consider this as well. I think it's instructive, though, too, that the next team odds still have the Bucks as the favorite at minus 200. A handful of other teams there that we could look at that could trade them, whether it's the trade form, whether it's the Rockets, the Thunder, the Spurs. I mean, a Giannis-Wemby combo. Ooh, we can dream on that. That would be fun.
Yeah, well, the Bucks are the incumbent here, right? Like, they don't have to trade Giannis. I think that's the reason that they're minus 200. Yeah, I think if Giannis does come to them and say, look, I want out of here, we know how this works in the NBA, right? The player gets their way, the team ends up having to trade it. But the Bucks, in theory, don't have to do that. So they're going to be minus 200 for a reason. You mentioned some of those appealing landing spots, the Rockets, the Thunder. I think those are the ideal trade partners. If you are Milwaukee, if you're resigned to the fact that, okay, we might have to reboot this thing, our franchise icon is gone, you want to make a trade with a team like Houston or OKC, because they can offer you picks, they can offer you players, they can keep you at least relatively competitive in the short term. We know Milwaukee really doesn't own any of its draft capital. They have picks that they've given away or swaps essentially through 2030. So there's not incentive here for Milwaukee to completely bottom out and just play the lottery game for the next few years. Like, you want a mix of players and picks coming back in that package if possible. And you know, that's where I don't love, you know, if you want to bet this market, like the Warriors at 11 to 1, the Nets at 16 to 1. I mean, everything coming out of Brooklyn is that, yes, the Nets want to be aggressive. This is what they've been waiting for. If you're the Bucks, I don't really know what package you would be all that fired up about. It's like, yeah, the Nets can offer you some first round picks, but in theory, Giannis is on their roster and they're a good team. And you're handing over like the 25th pick every single year. Same with the Warriors. They don't really have any young players that you'd be overly interested in. Obviously, they're not trading you Steph Curry. Not that you'd really want him at this point in his career. So I think Houston, OKC, and then San Antonio, like you mentioned, there's some young talent on that roster. You got Stephon Castle, you got Devin Vassell, Jeremy Sohan, you have picks. And again, who knows? One of those teams could very well jump up in the lottery later tonight.
Yeah, I think that is definitely the point. I think it's hilarious that the Lakers are a top 10 team on this list, and we'll move on after this, but what do they possibly have to give? I know they're mentioned in every single trade rumor. Any star, oh, let's bring him to LA. Then yeah. They get what they want. I mean, the Luka Doncic trade illustrates anything can happen, but I think it's hilarious that they're listed at 18 to 1.
Yeah, I guess you could build something around Reeves. I don't know if Luka tells you he doesn't want to resign, maybe you swap Luka for Giannis. I don't know. I mean, it's the Lakers. They're on there because they're the Lakers. But I think for a team like LA, and again for the Nets, and you know, some of these other teams that we're talking about, the Warriors, like those teams, that would take Giannis saying, "I want to go play for this team, and I'm not accepting anything else." Yeah, that's the reason those teams are included, I think, because of the market and this idea you know, superstars want to play in these big markets. So unless Giannis outright says, trade me to the LA Lakers, no, that's not happening.
All right. We spent enough time talking about what's not happening or what hasn't happened yet. Let's talk about what happened yesterday. Thunder rallied in the fourth, tied series at 2-2. Huge, huge pull out there. Weird game. You know, Denver scores 8 points in the first quarter, and yet they're winning by the early third quarter. You know, OKC had to rally. They did, just terrible shooting game. And yet here we are, and the Thunder are back in a pretty good position again at 2-2 in the series.
Yeah. The Thunder are overwhelming favorites now to win this series. They're close to minus 200 to win the Western Conference. So the market has never really jumped off of OKC. And I would have been really interested to see how that shifted had they lost and gone down 3-1, but we're back to 2-2. If this does go seven, of course, the Thunder get two of those last three games at home. You know, watching this yesterday afternoon, Jeff, this felt like no matter what, it was going to be a massive missed opportunity by one team. And of course, that team ended up being Denver because, yeah, we could talk about Denver scoring 8 points in the first quarter. They didn't have their 10th point until like 3 minutes into the second quarter. This was the worst combined field goal percentage in any NBA playoff game since 2004. But the Thunder, I thought early in the game, missed an opportunity to run away with it, right? And I think if you're Denver, you can look at what OKC did offensively and say, man, we held them to 35% shooting. They went 10 of 41 from three. You know, Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, SGA, and Lu Dort go 2 of 23 from three, and we still lose this game at home. So I think there's a good chance, you know, if this plays out the way that the books think it will with OKC, you know, winning this in six or seven, this might be the one that we look back at and say, man, Denver played such a good defensive game. Christian Brown, it felt like, was the only Nuggets player to be who had an above average game on both ends. And he only went 4 of 11 from the field, right? And knocked down some big shots at key moments, but he was 2 of 9 from three. The Nuggets don't have a bench right now. And that was the big difference in this game. OKC starters were brutal, but Alex Caruso, Cason Wallace, Aaron Wiggins, those guys stepped up. Denver got a minus 20 out of Russell Westbrook, who's basically their only bench player right now.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at, you look at their schedule too. They're playing these games at altitude too. B, they've been so busy. They had their game seven that they had to deal with there. They've played so many games recently. They have to be just gassed. I think, and you can see that maybe in the shooting, the legs just aren't there.
Yeah, Chet Holmgren mentioned it, I thought, on the broadcast after the first quarter. You know, it was the rare, like, oh, wow, that was actually a pretty decent interview in game where he said, you know, he's basically asked, like, why is this game as bad as it is? And he's like, well, it kind of feels like a back-to-back, honestly. You know, we played late on Friday night. It was overtime. And now we're playing a day game, you know, 48 hours later. So I think that was a contributing factor. But again, if you're Denver, you're at home. Like, you should feel like you have the advantage in that situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll talk about the Pacers blowout of the Cleveland Cavaliers. But first, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use. Rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. All right, Pacers, Cavs. Tough break if you had Pacers under 79.5 in the first quarter, in the first half.
Live line at halftime was Cavs plus 32.5. That gives you a pretty good indication of how the first 24 minutes went. Pacers led 80-39 going into the half. And this was yet another game in these playoffs, Jeff, where it just felt completely over by the end of the first quarter. And I know we've had some comebacks. The Pacers have been included in some of those. So you don't want to just completely start writing your gamer after 12 minutes. But it was clear from the jump that Cleveland just did not have it. You know, Donovan Mitchell going out at halftime, tweaking his ankle. We'll talk about him a little bit later. Not that you felt like Cleveland had much of a chance even with him to climb back into the game. But once we got that news, you just knew it wasn't happening. Cavs had 14 turnovers in the first half. They had a 77.7 offensive rating in the first half. They gave up a 159.4 offensive rating to the Indiana Pacers. And really disappointing game, I thought, from Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, who just did not impact this game on either end whatsoever. Allen especially, you know, basically went Kyle Kuzma mode last night. And I'll say this, Jeff, before we head to break. I am at the point where I'm at least considering betting Indiana to win the Eastern Conference. This team is not scared of anyone. They did this to Milwaukee. They're doing it to Cleveland. Pretty easy to imagine the Pacers being up 2-1 right now on the Boston Celtics with what we've seen from that team. So maybe we'll get into that later in the show, but that's something I'm at least batting around.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I love hearing it. You know me, I'm Team Indiana, so let's go. But yeah, we will talk about the two games tonight and maybe a little NFL coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Two more Game 4s tonight in the NBA. We'll start off with Celtics at the Knicks. Game 4 at MSG. You know, order kind of restored on Saturday with the Celtics running all over the Knicks. Or do the Knicks rally and get that 3-1 lead? What happens here tonight?
Yeah, I could see the Knicks rallying. I also think to say order was restored in Game 3 makes some sense, partially because the Celtics, you know, finally had one of the shooting nights that you would expect to be more frequent for this team in the postseason. I will say it is interesting to look at the series odds here, Jeff. And we talked about, you know, OKC getting a ton of respect at the books. The same thing is occurring with the Boston Celtics, who, of course, trailed this series 2-0. They were still heavy favorites, now at 2-1. The Knicks, who are up 2-1 in the series, basically have the same odds to win the series as the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are injured and down 3-1 in their own series. So there's not a lot of faith in New York, and I get it, right? I mean, Boston had some all-time collapses in Game 1 and Game 2, and you know, one of those games took overtime. The other one took a crazy series of events where the Celtics don't have a field goal for 8.5 minutes for New York to step in and steal that game. So I think the argument is you need extenuating circumstances for Boston to lose, whereas if the Celtics just play like average offensively, they should win just about every matchup in this series. Now, again, the shooting was there in Game 3. Knicks were terrible from three. They shot just 40% from the field. Meanwhile, Boston hits 23s. This was yet another one of those games that you just felt like it was over immediately. And speaking of the shooting, Jeff, I've been watching these playoffs, as have you, and I just feel like it's more frequent than ever that we have these complete disaster shooting games. So I had to dive into the numbers, and it turns out that is the case. So with OKC and Denver and New York over the weekend, all taking at least 25 threes, all shooting 25% or worse, 20 instances already in these playoffs has that happened, where a team shoots 25% or less from three. So that's 20 times in 57 playoff games. It only happened 16 times all of last year in the playoffs, 82 games. So if you're watching these games and you're wondering why it resembles college basketball or 2006 NBA in terms of the final scores, it is because we have had these aberration shooting performances more than ever. Now, to go back to tonight's game, I lean Boston with the 6.5 for what I already mentioned, which is that as long as they just play like average offensively, they should cruise. Even in the two games New York won, they were down big. They had to make those miracle rallies. I would also lean under on the total here at 208. The pace has been way, way down in this series, especially in Game 3. We were down in the mid-80s in terms of pace. So even if Boston has a great shooting game, you know, we're still not looking at a 125-point night. And I think the Knicks are going to continue to struggle offensively. Boston has all the length to throw at Jalen Brunson. Karl Anthony Towns has admitted that he's banged up. So I would not be surprised if we get another lower scoring effort tonight.
I always appreciate the dive into Wayland metrics like this. What do you attribute the big jump from last year to this year? I just wanted to, you know, I thought maybe it's just, okay, analytics have taken over basketball. It hasn't gone so much from last year to this year. There's not that one event. So what do you attribute it? Are teams defending the three better? What's going on here?
You know, if you look at the number of like open and wide open threes over at NBA.com, it would tell you that it's pretty static year over year. I really don't know what it is. You know, I think there are certain matchups like this Boston New York series, for instance. I think the 3-point defense has actually been really good on both sides. You have, you know, multiple really, really good defenders, guys with length who challenge shots on the perimeter. But it's hard to explain like the droughts that Minnesota has gone through, the droughts, you know, with OKC and Denver. Like so many of these are just wide open looks. And, you know, the fact that it's lasting like full games, that's what's kind of crazy to me. Like it's one thing to, you know, go like 1 of 12 from three in the first half, but usually that'll kind of correct itself and maybe you'll shoot 30% for the game. But we've seen, you know, 5, 6, 7 of these games where it feels like a team has a disastrous shooting first half and it's just as bad in the second. So it's tough to explain. I'm not really sure.
All right, let's move on to the nightcap. Minnesota Golden State, Minnesota -5.5, total of 199.5 in this one. In the game four, Minnesota up 2-1 after winning at Golden State on Saturday night. What happens in this game tonight?
I think the Wolves win again. I think game three was a reminder that given the Steph injury for Golden State, that the Wolves, much like Boston, just have to avoid a complete disaster offensively, and they should win because Golden State cannot score. And you know, we talked about the numbers with Steph on and off, and the offensive rating plummets under 100 points per 100 possessions. And you know, Golden State actually had a reasonable offensive game. You know, they put up a 105 offensive rating, which minus Steph is not that bad compared to some of the games that they've had without him this season. But they just don't have the bodies, man. They don't have the bodies right now to keep up with Minnesota if again, they're just having an average offensive game. I mean, you got an awesome game out of Jimmy Butler on Saturday. You got an all-time out of nowhere Jonathan Kuminga 30 points off the bench game, and you still scored 97 points and lost despite Minnesota not playing all that well offensively. You know, one thing that sticks out to me, Jeff, is they're not taking enough threes. And you know, it's hard to ask guys who maybe aren't comfortable taking those shots just to take them because of the math, but you can't take 23 three-pointers in an NBA playoff game in 2025 and expect to win the math battle. So that is one of the reasons that I'm looking at Buddy Hield over 3.5 threes tonight. You can get that at +124. He's already gone over this number in four straight games. He's averaging 5.5 makes on 9 attempts in that span. They just need Buddy Hield to keep firing away. Like if I'm Steve Kerr, I'm telling Buddy Hield, you're in the starting lineup for a reason. We need you to take 10, 11, 12 threes, whatever it takes just to get those attempts up. Other props that I'm looking at tonight, Anthony Edwards, over 6.5 rebounds. We're going back to the well for that one. Grabbed it at plus money last night. Still decent price, -105. He's been a great rebounder throughout these playoffs. Edwards to lead the game in scoring. I like this one at +120. Butler feels like the main threat. You know, maybe Julius Randle, who's been good in this series, but I think that's a pretty fair price for a guy who's easily the best scorer between these two teams. And then if you're looking for a long shot tonight, Rudy Gobert, double-double at +235. He has only one double-double in the playoffs, but he's been a point away twice already in this series. We'll see how much they go to him. I'd like to see a few more Gobert minutes, but the rebounds have been there. We just need a little bit of luck in terms of the scoring.
Yeah, second half, Rudy Gobert gets there, I think, pretty quickly. Maybe not quickly, but pretty comfortably, I would say. Yeah. Let's talk a little NBA draft lottery, which runs tonight. But first, smarter bets start here and last all year long with VSiN Pro. For a limited time, we're slashing the price of our annual subscription. Normally $240, now just $199. And when you sign up today, we'll throw in 2 extra months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code PRO. Get 14 months of access to our daily best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, exclusive splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 live video and full show replays on the VSiN Watch app, plus all of our special edition betting guides. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now. Right now, and use promo code PRO to lock in 14 months of VSiN Pro for just $199. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, Nick, it's the NBA draft lottery tonight. Last year, Atlanta leapt and got the number one pick. Wrong year to get it. They should have gotten it this year. Unfortunately, they won't do that. What are the most fun teams to jump up to number one for you this year?
First of all, to me, it's none of the three teams with the highest odds, those being Utah, Washington, and Charlotte. I don't really want Cooper Flagg to end up with any of those teams. There's a case to be made that maybe if you're looking at, like, where could Cooper Flagg put up the best numbers right away? Yeah, maybe some of those teams have opportunity. But in terms of, like, fun landing spots, in terms of where I think he would develop best, I don't think it's in Utah or Washington or Charlotte. Utah, by the way, finished with the worst record. And since the NBA adopted these smooth lottery odds, no team with the worst record has actually ended up with the number one pick. That goes all the way back to 2019. So something to monitor tonight if that streak can be snapped. To me, Houston, Toronto, San Antonio, Portland, New Orleans. Those are the five teams that I would like to see jump up to number one, just from a pure fun perspective. I have no rooting interest with any of these teams. Philly, to some degree. I don't think they deserve it by any means, but, you know, the Sixers all of a sudden holding the number one pick, I think would be very interesting from an NBA offseason perspective. And keep in mind, if Philly falls at all, if they fall out of the top six, which is unlikely but possible, their pick would go to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So imagine adding a top 10 pick to that roster, which might be the best in the NBA right now. As we mentioned earlier, this lottery could heavily, heavily impact the Giannis Antetokounmpo situation. It could impact the Kevin Durant trade market to a lesser extent. But, you know, again, Houston, San Antonio, those are the two teams you look at. They could be on the list for Giannis. And, man, the ability to say, hey, not only can we give you some young players, we can give you some future picks. How about Cooper Flagg to potentially add to your young core, to kind of be your heir apparent as a franchise savior? I think that makes that deal a little bit more palatable for Milwaukee.
Yeah, 100% it would. Quickly, about a minute left here. We know the first matchup of the NFL season. It's going to be Philly hosting the Dallas Cowboys, Thursday night game. Opening line, Eagles -7, total 46.5. You got an immediate snap call reaction to either of those lines.
Oh, man. I would lean Eagles. I would lean Eagles. You know, I think this is another offseason where you come out with a lot of questions for Dallas. Obviously, they just made the George Pickens trade. And yeah, in general, I'm in favor of rolling the dice on a player like Pickens. I think it was a very Cowboys thing to do. But look, if you're asking me to handicap NFL week one on May 12th, I'm going to default to what I think is the best roster by a good margin in the NFL and take the Philadelphia Eagles at home. I think I'll lean over, by the way, on that 46.5.
Yeah, a lot of defensive defections on that Phillies defensive unit there. That's the thing that kind of, for the Eagles, I think they lost a lot of key, maybe not key players, but instrumental players. And they may take a while to get all the pieces working back together again. Talking hockey next, AJ Schultz, RotoWire's NHL assistant editor, joins us next on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson hanging out with you. And we are excited to welcome on one of our favorite guests. He helps us break down the National Hockey League, our NHL assistant editor over at rotowire.com. AJ Schultz joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. AJ, plenty to unpack from a busy playoff weekend in the NHL. We'll get your picks for tonight's pair of game fours as we move through. But I want to start with the Maple Leafs and the Panthers. Panthers win 2-0 yesterday to even that series up at two games apiece. Now, you look at the series pricing over at the DraftKings Sportsbook, Florida now -190 to win this series. Would you consider jumping on Toronto at +160?
I think you have to consider it given they're at home. So, yes, they're coming off a pretty disappointing loss here. I mean, you've got Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, Willie Nylander, and you can't score a goal. You've got a goalie that makes 35 saves and only gives up two and against a pretty good Florida Panthers offense, and you can't come away with a win. So that's a disappointing loss, but the fact is they still have home ice advantage. And so win at home and they're golden. So I would definitely consider taking the value on that price tag.
Yeah. You got to be kind of disappointed that you only got 23 shots even in that game against Bobrovsky and company there. You know, especially given that Joseph Wall stepping in, played excellently, you know, 35 saves for Wall. I mean, it was, you know, he stood on his head, you know, and it was all the way until the end in the third period for that, you know, bonus goal basically there. They took 21 of the first 26 shots. You know, it's just a very disappointing performance by the Toronto Skaters overall. But yeah, I kind of think, though, this has been a series of home teams so far. Kind of curious to see what happens in game five. Very pivotal game.
Absolutely. And to your point about, you know, Bobrovsky, only 23 shots. This was his best outing of the postseason, really, for the most part. He did have another shutout early in the Tampa series. But in the other games against the Maple Leafs, he's given up 13 goals on 81 shots. So, you know, 4.1 goals against average. He's looked very bad in games one through three and finally showed up in that game four. But again, Jeff, to your point, not a huge volume. And I think if Toronto can up the number of shots, they'll start leaking past Bobrovsky because we just haven't seen peak form out of him in the postseason here.
Talk with AJ Scholes, one of our NHL editors over at rotowire.com. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Stars get a big win over the Jets yesterday, put up 5 goals in that one. Dallas now leads that series 2-1, and they are huge favorites right now on the series line, -320 at DraftKings. Are we counting the Jets out of this? I'll ask you the same thing I did about Florida-Toronto. Jets right now, +260 to win the series. Is that worth a sprinkle?
It absolutely is. Again, they don't have the home ice, or they do have home ice advantage as well. Now that's gotten a little broken up, so they would need to steal game four here down in Dallas to kind of retake that home ice advantage. They do have, despite what we've seen in the postseason, they do have arguably the best netminder in the league. I mean, he's going to win the Vezina Trophy for best regular season. So if Connor Hellebuyck can figure out what's going on with his game, he is certainly capable of putting together a strong performance like we saw in game two when he pitched a shutout in that one. So to get, you know, a little over 2-1 value, almost 3-1 value for them to win the series, they've been my pick for Stanley Cup champion since before the playoffs started. So for me, might as well double down here, right? if I can get a little value here, stick with them. They haven't done themselves any favors, but if they can steal one in Dallas, they've still got two at home and can make it all the way, I think.
His name is AJ, but we call him Double Down. Let's talk a little bit about Mikko Rantanen. Are we talking enough about Rantanen? 9 playoff goals, eliminated one of his former teams, could face his other in the Stanley Cup final. If we get that far, Carolina's well positioned to be on its way there as well. So still possible we can see that. Are we giving him enough credit? Is he worth this trade haul that Dallas gave away there? Is this all becoming worth it here?
It certainly seems like it. You know, the fact that they brought him in technically as a rental, but were able to get that long-term contract right away. So there's a little less, like the pain on what they gave up is a little less than if he had just walked right away. So, you know, you look multiple, looks like 5 multi-point games in his last 6 contests and just exploding in the postseason here. We thought maybe we'd see a bit of a drop against Winnipeg once that, you know, Colorado motivation fell off a little bit for him, but he continues to thrive for Dallas right now, and it makes that trade look pretty good. Again, especially considering they've locked him up for basically the rest of his like career, 8 years. You know, he'll be 36, 37 by the time that contract ends, so you've already gotten the value out of him for it, whether or not they would sign him to a future deal at that point.
We'll talk tonight's game fours in a moment with AJ Scholes. But first, we got the Preakness coming up this weekend. You can bet the Preakness Stakes with First Bet and get rewarded. New customers, if you use the promo code VSIN200 to score 20% rebate on all wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. That's win or lose. You get paid back. Download the First Bet app or visit firstbet.com/bet. Use promo code VSIN200 to get started today. That's first.com/bet, promo code VSIN200. AJ Scholes hanging out with us on the Progressive Guest Line. AJ, we got Caps Hurricanes, we got Knights Oilers. Game four is coming our way tonight. We will start with Washington and Carolina. Hurricanes leading this series 2-1. I know you have a play on the total tonight.
Yeah, these two teams have been the best two teams defensively in the postseason. Both have limited their opponent's goal scoring to under 3 goals per game on average. really just, you know, I hammer the under in this one. We've seen it cash in three straight games. There's no reason to expect any change here. I don't see either of these teams suddenly becoming, you know, laps defensively to the point where we would see a heavy over here on the total. So absolutely hammer the under on this one. Now, I will say there is one player prop in this one I really like. Kind of, you know, like when you're going under, kind of limit your player props. At least that's my approach. But you can get Seth Jarvis to get more than 1 point, comes in at minus 185, but all of his points lately have been assists. So turn to the assist prop and you can get him to pick up one more assist at plus 120. You can get a ton of value on Jarvis tonight. Again, he's got five assists in his last eight games. All of those have come with a man advantage, so he'll get plenty of power play time. So stick with him to get assists. Don't bother with the point prop there. There's no value, and he hasn't been scoring anyway. So Seth Jarvis, plus 120 to pick up an assist.
Moving on to Edmonton and Vegas Golden Knights. Goalkeeping has been one of the big stories there. Calvin Picard is hurt. Stuart Skinner sometimes looks like Principal Skinner trying to defend a puck. It's been really fighting it there, really kind of got out of sorts on that game-winning goal with like 0.4 seconds left on Saturday night. And it looks like Skinner is going to be protecting the nets again tonight. Does that leave you to a lean on the side or the total in this one?
Absolutely hammer the over here. If, you know, one game defensively, the under is the way to go. The other one is the over. And I would take the over even if Calvin Picard were still playing. Pickard there was like, everybody was singing his praises after winning six straight games. But if you look at his numbers during that stretch, he had multiple games where he gave up four or more goals. So it's not like he was really limiting the opposing offense. He was just doing enough there. Aiden Hill hasn't looked particularly sharp from the Vegas Golden Knights side. And there's a ton of star power on both of these rosters. You've got Eichel, Stone on the Vegas side, obviously McDavid and Draisaitl on the Edmonton side. I just don't see, again, I don't see this suddenly becoming a defensively stout matchup between two teams. This is going to be a shooting fest, and we're going to have to see which team comes out on top. I think it could go either way, but that if you target the total, who cares who wins, right?
Well, look, AJ, if we like the over on 6.5, there have to be some props that I think you would target here, whether you're looking at goals or assists. So we got about 30 seconds left here. Anybody that comes to mind for you?
I think number one for me is actually the shot total for Connor McDavid. Comes in at plus 115, so over 3.5 shots. It's a high number. Usually I get scared off by shot totals that are that high, but he has continued to put pucks on the net, even though he actually hasn't been scoring that much. It's been a little bit more heavy on the assist total for him, but there's not enough value for one assist. You could consider McDavid two assists, comes in at plus 150. But for me, I think I just stick with the shot total, even at that over 3.5 coming in pretty high.
All right, there we have it. AJ Scholes looking at the under 5.5 goals in Caps Hurricanes, likes the over 6.5 in that Knights Oilers game. A couple game fours coming your way in the NHL tonight. You can find AJ's work over at RotoWire. You can check him out on Twitter at AJScholes24. Switching over to Major League Baseball, Jeff Erickson's best bets for an 11-game slate coming your way next here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points. Nick Whalen and Jeff Erickson here with you for another 15 minutes, taking you up to the top of the hour. As always, make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next on the Sports Betting Network. He's going to have Greg Peterson on the show today, giving out some of his favorite betting angles for this Major League Baseball slate. Jeff, I know you got a bunch of best bets to unload for us, but we do have some news in Major League Baseball that I want to begin with here. Shockingly, out of nowhere, the Colorado Rockies, the 7-33 Colorado Rockies, have parted ways with Bud Black. They were, of course, beaten down 21-0 by the San Diego Padres on Saturday. They turn around and win on Sunday, but nevertheless, Bud Black becomes our second manager fired this season.
I know we don't do props in this show, so I won't light a candle on air for Bud Black, but I will wear the purple shirt today instead, just as a little memory. We pick on the Rockies all the time because the front office and ownership do so many dumb things over the time. This isn't a firing. This is an emancipation. Poor Bud Black had nothing to work with here. I mean, he has some things that he does wrong, sure. But this is a total shuffling deck chairs on the deck of the Titanic sort of move. Maybe even worse than the Pirates, perhaps. The Rockies have a -128 run differential. They had given up double digit runs in four consecutive games before Sunday's 9-3 win. It's kind of funny. They actually gave the vote of confidence to Bud Black before the 21-0 game on Saturday, but then that happened. It kind of was like a last straw situation. Here are the extent of the Rockies' offseason acquisitions this past offseason. Thairo Estrada, $3.5 million, 1 year off a down and injured year in San Francisco. Got hurt in spring training, hasn't played an inning yet. Scott Alexander, lefty swingman. Mickey Moniak, cut by the Angels. These are the guys, $2 million and $2 million respectively by that. That's their investment this offseason. This is not a serious franchise. The fact that they fired Black, maybe it gives them a dead cat bounce of some sort, but this is such a bad team. They have one high salary player, unfortunately, it's Chris Bryant, $27 million. And that back is so bad. He may not even play again. He's indefinitely out. It's a shame to see it. Bud Black, a good baseball man, could be better. But this is just a joke of a franchise in a beautiful ballpark and a great fan base. And it's a shame they've ruined this franchise.
Well, after that win on Sunday, Jeff, the Rockies went from like a 24 win pace to a 28 win pace. That's what happens. Like the wins are coming so infrequently that the projection like makes a huge leap every time they do come through. Colorado, by the way, the second toughest remaining schedule in baseball the rest of the way. Very, very difficult schedule coming up to conclude the month of May. Other news, more positive news, Jeff. The Arizona Diamondbacks called up their top prospect, Jordan Lawler, number four overall prospect at MLB.com. I know our guy James Anderson has him in his top 20. That'll be updated shortly, by the way, over at RotoWire. Hard to argue with the results for Lawler, who was a first-round pick a few years ago, you know, tearing the cover off the ball down at AAA. The question, Jeff, is, you know, Arizona's pretty healthy right now. You know, this lineup is producing. Maybe they're not sitting in the standings where they hope to be right now, but they're putting up runs. There's not an obvious, okay, Jordan Lawler is coming up to replace player X fit here. So how often are we going to see him in the lineup? What does this mean for fantasy baseball players?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It is one of the better lineups in baseball. They're 21-20. Anything that's drawing them short is mostly their pitching. You know, they could use a little bit more production out of left field, and maybe that somehow gets factored in. But, you know, the question here is, where does Lawler play? And he's a great prospect. We weren't able to bid on him in free agent bidding in most of our leagues last night because the free agent run ended well before this call-up was kind of as it was reported. So, but does he displace Ketel Marte? No. Does he displace Geraldo Perdomo, who just signed a contract extension in spring training? Probably not. Perdomo's having a good year. Eusebio Suarez isn't hitting for average, but he has 12 homers. He had 30 homers last season. He's a producer for this team. Chances are he won't displace him. So the suggestion has been he's going to give these guys an occasional day off, like once a week, maybe factor in the DH role where Pavin Smith currently resides. Smith can get some time in the outfield as well. That might be one of the ways this works out a little bit. So you're talking about four games a week. Now, talent usually wills out when you're talking about an elite prospect. So we'll see. I'd still say go get him in your leagues if you can, but he's not going to be like, for instance, the bidding size on Nick Kurtz. I don't think he will, at least, just because of the playing time issue.
Well, we may see him tonight. Diamondbacks play in the late window on the road at the Giants. So way too early for an official Diamondbacks lineup, but we will see on that. Merrill Kelly going up against Justin Verlander. I know you're looking at a money line play on the D-backs here.
Yeah, I've been kind of fading Justin Verlander. He's pitched better lately. Three out of his last four were quality starts. But those three starts were Colorado at home, not in Coors Field, Texas, and at the Angels. And the Angels are one of my favorite teams to pick on with starting pitchers. Point is, I think you can discount some of the good numbers from Verlander. And his overall numbers even aren't that great. 450 ERA, 131 whip. Arizona, second in baseball in WOBA versus right-handers, a 346 mark. Yes, the ballpark will suppress some of that offense, but not entirely. Meanwhile, the opposing pitcher is Merrill Kelly. And Merrill Kelly had a terrible 9-run outing in his second start. It was in the rain. It's just one of those games where you just write it off. That was at the height of torpedo bat mania. Since that start, he's had a 257 ERA and a 0.77 whip. That I think he's an actually quality average cromulent starting pitcher. Give me Arizona on the money line at minus 118.
It's funny you bring up the torpedo bat, Jeff. A massive story the first week of the season. Haven't really thought much about it.
Yeah.
Or really heard much about it in the last 3 or 4 weeks. Cardinals-Phillies. We get Matthew Liberatore going up against Christopher Sanchez. Cardinals, 8-game winning streak right now. You just hate to see it. I know you're looking at a Liberatore prop, so tell me what you like here.
Yeah, that's a literal hate to see it for you, too, as a Brewers guy. Not a like you hate to see it when someone's down sort of thing. This is interesting. Good pitching matchup. Two great lefties, Matthew Liberatore versus Christopher Sanchez. Sanchez threw a 7 shutout at the Rays in that minor league ballpark last time out. Cardinals, as you alluded to, on that 8-game winning streak. You know, both teams are very good against lefties. 336 WOBA for the Phillies against lefties, 323 for the Cardinals, 8th and 9th in baseball, respectively. At least the Phillies do strike out more against lefties. 24.8% strikeout percentage. That's the top. That's among the top 10 strikeout teams against lefties. And Liberatore has been awesome so far for the Cardinals. 3.07 ERA, 0.95 whip, 38-6 K to walk. He's really limited the walks this year. I don't feel comfortable betting the side. Although if you do, getting plus 145 for a team that's 1-8 in a row, that seems a little, seems like that's a decent price at the very least. But I'm going to go instead with the Liberatore over 5.5 Ks at plus 165. I'm going to go, that's one strikeout more than is over under, which is at 4.5, but that's at minus odds. So I'm trying to go with the plus odds payoff here.
Pittsburgh Pirates are on the road tonight at the New York Mets. Mets, sizable favorites on the money line, minus 166, low total here at 7. It is Paul Skeens going up against David Peterson. And this is Paul Skeens, Jeff, who is still your NL Cy Young favorite, but coming off of 2 straight losses, control starting to be a bit of an issue for Skeens. So how do we break this one down?
Yeah, 4 walks apiece in each of his last 2 starts against the Cubs and the Cardinals. I'm kind of, you know, I feel out of principle you should be considering anytime you get Skeens as plus money at plus 140, but it is such a dramatic team difference here. The Pirates offense is just woeful right now, and especially against lefties, 24th in WOBA at 274. They strike out. You were talking about strikeout percentage last time with the last game. The Pirates are at 26.3% against lefties. That's, you know, even more than the strikeout prop we're going with here. So I'm going to go with David Peterson over 5.5 Ks, minus 125. I think the and Peterson has been pretty good, and he's faced some really tough lineups. Arizona twice and Philly in his last 3 starts. This is a much better matchup for him. So I'm going to focus on Peterson at the over 5.5 Ks.
All right. We got to get to our G-Bank best bets of the night, but I know you're also looking at the over 8 runs in that Yankees Mariners game later tonight. And taking a look at that Boston money line going up against the Detroit Tigers. That's Tanner Houck versus Jackson Jobe. Our best bets of the night are brought to you by G-Bank. You can get the G-Bank Visa Signature Card right now. Most credit cards treat sportsbook and gaming transactions as cash advances. That's even when you put your own money on the card. But G-Bank treats gaming transactions as purchases. You're saving 3 to 5% on cash advance fees and gaming transactions right there. Plus, with G-Bank, you're also earning 1% cash back rewards on all eligible sportsbook and gaming transactions and 2% cash back rewards on all eligible purchases. You can apply now over at vsin.com/gbank. That's vsin.com/gbank. All right, Jeff, you just gave us all these plays in Major League Baseball. I know you're going over to the NBA for your G-Bank best bet.
Yeah, I have a pretty strong feel about this Minnesota -5.5 against the Warriors. I think most things went right on Saturday night for the Warriors, and they still couldn't beat the Timberwolves. Timberwolves, as you alluded to, don't have a pretty wide margin of error. And I think more things go right. I think they cover the -5.5.
You know, looking at the betting splits at VSiN.com, 58% of the handle coming in on the Timberwolves to cover that 5.5. I'm going Anthony Edwards, leading this game in scoring. Shop around a bit, found it at plus 120 over at DraftKings. That's going to wrap it up for the Monday edition of Prop Points, but make sure you stick around. Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next. Greg Peterson stopping by, talking MLB betting. Keep it here.